This episode is brought to you by Noom. Forget one-size-fits-all diets. With Noom, you get a personalized weight loss plan that's tailored to your lifestyle. No food is off-limits. Enjoy your favorites while discovering healthier habits. Noom's users love the flexible approach, blending psychology and biology to help you lose weight in a way that's sustainable for you. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast, number 520. Hey, Jonah Ray, what are you doing over there in this intro?
Oh, I'm just hanging out, just having a good time.
What is your good time over there?
Ooh, just hanging out with friends, having good conversations, nice sunny day outside.
Oh, you're kind of going into weird Bing Crosby.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Just over here enjoying a nice tall glass of OJ.
Oh, that's me right there, right now. You know that.
Well, we're heading off this weekend to do At Midnight Live at the Wild West Comedy Festival, Friday and Saturday, May 15th and 16th. And then also, we just announced our Comic-Con shows. We're doing an At Midnight Live Friday, July 25th, 10:30 p.m. at the Balboa, and then a Nerdist Podcast Live Saturday the 26th at the Balboa also.
That should be a lot of fun. Love that Balboa Theater.
It's such a great, it's a perfect venue.
It's the perfect venue.
It's big, but it's not too big.
Yes, and it's just off from the hectic downtownness of San Diego to just be like nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. So we'll have fun guests. We'll have a good time. So go get tickets for that. This episode of Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Dollar Shave Club.
Dollar Shave Club.
Yeah. You know why? Because razors are expensive, Jonah. Like, it's your fault. Why would you make razors expensive?
And why would I even never use one?
You're some sort of weird billion-dollar shave robber baron.
Well, I heard they were going under, and so I bought a bunch.
Well, DollarShaveClub.com sends you amazing quality razors and other cool bathroom stuff right to your door for just a couple of bucks a month. It could not be easier. Dollar Shave Club does not waste money on ridiculous shave tech gimmicks. They basically just send you simple quality shaving implements and bathroom stuff for just, as I said, a few bucks a month. Four blades. If you want four blades,
quad.
You want a quad, and you pay $6 for a four pack. I mean, $6 for the best quality blades that you can possibly get. The signing up couldn't be easier. Go to dollarshaveclub.com. Pick a razor plan. There's three to choose from. Say no thank you to big shave companies and their ridiculously overpriced shave tech. You don't need it. You're paying for CG graphics in a commercial. Screw that noise.
Yeah. We're here to shave you from overpriced blades.
Wait, you're going to shave people?
Yeah.
I know you were doing a play on words, but it sounds like you were offering to shave
you're
people.
You're right. It's a bad time for a word replacement joke.
Yeah.
If you could shave me.
Do you think we could get Amy to come in and...
from the ring.
I stepped in a pile of shaving cream.
Be nice and clean.
Yes.
Shave every day, and you'll always look keen with Dollar Shave Club. Join us at Nerdist and the hundreds of thousands of guys who have upgraded to the smarter way to shave. Shave time, shave money. DollarShaveClub.com/Nerdist. That's DollarShaveClub.com/Nerdist. This episode is Jim Jefferies. He's promoting his day streaming tour happening now across the United States. Tickets available at jimjefferies.com. I pronounce it that way because it's Jefferies. Jim, JefferiES.com. And his show Legit, which is Wednesdays at 10 p.m. on FXX. This is Jim's second appearance on the old Nerdist Podcast. True. And he's always really nice. Jim's just one of those guys where he's like, I don't know. He just makes everything easy. Like, he doesn't like to complicate things. He's like a funny, funny, nice guy, and he was great on At Midnight when he came on. So, and Jim will probably be one of those guys that pops up on the podcast from time to time. Check. Just like Jonah Ray.
That's me.
Pops up from time to time.
Make it when I can.
All right, buddy. I'm going to let's nerd the podcast number 520.
What happened to your voice?
What are you talking about?
Chris, are you having that stroke?
What are you having a stroke?
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Chair. I'll sit on this old school assembly job. Doesn't matter what country. Do we have these in Australia? Same ones.
Yeah, those are pretty universal.
Yeah.
Because every country wants you to have a poor sitting experience.
Yeah.
In one way or another.
Also, I remember whenever you're in trouble at school, there was a lot of... well, you have to fold up all the chairs after assembly. So there'd be like 1,000 chairs, but you and your mate just...
Just folding.
Yeah.
Putting them on big carts and pushing them over.
Because no teacher ever folded up the chairs. They were just banking on there'd be a couple of bad kids every Wednesday after assembly.
That's why you take a teaching job, though, so you can make bad kids do work.
Did you ever get the cane? Is this the show? Are we doing this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
did you ever get the cane?
No. I never got the cane, which is great because I went to Catholic school too.
Yeah.
But they were not. It was not a corporal punishment type of thing.
I had the cane. I got the cane in a very weird way, Mr. McKibben.
It sounds like an STD the way you say it.
Yeah, I got the cane.
Picked up the cane.
But it was all on Australian TV, and we're talking like 1989, maybe 1990. And the news was like this. It was like, and as of next week, the cane will be illegal in all schools across Australia.
So they were just itching to get those
but
last
they gave
few.
It was like when they were trying to bring the smoking ban in. Like, you can smoke indoors, but as of Friday, you can't smoke. And so everyone was just smoking inside.
Just blowing it on the walls.
People who weren't smokers were trying to get it in. So when they said, like, they were just itching to cane kids around my school. There was like, I went there and I remember there was a line for the cane.
Record number of canings.
Yeah, like, and this was just at that time of the day, like they were coming and going, but there was 4 kids in front of me.
Well, okay, my grade school, we had, there was a paddle.
Yeah.
There was a paddle, and rumor has it they would drill holes in the paddle to cut down
the wind resistance. Yeah.
But I never received the paddle, but you got caned.
I got caned. So you go into the office and he said, put your hand out. And then I got 3 canings across the hand.
Oh, on the hand? Is that how it works?
Yeah, across the fingers.
Oh, that part of your finger. Oh,
yeah.
Fuck.
And you'd get a welt across there. But the thing was, like, you'd cheer up, and the teacher was a pretty sadistic sort of guy, and he just sort of stood there and just went, dry your eyes. You don't want the other boys to see you. Like, I was I went to a co-ed school, but there was other boys waiting to get hit.
Sure.
So he goes, you don't want the other boys to see you crying, do you?
Oh, like, just taunting
and
you.
And so he gives you like 30 seconds and you go, yeah, okay. And you sort of dry your eyes and then you walk out. But this is the thing. I wouldn't have had my life any other way because that was a kick-ass story, especially to tell like girls that were a bit younger than you when you're in school. Like a girl who was a year below you, because this happened to me like in year 7 or year 8, which is like the start of like a sophomore or a freshman or whatever you call them over here. And so you just say, yeah, I got the cane. It wasn't like when you young kids came into this. And to show your welts around the schoolyard and go, didn't hurt that much.
It was a badge of honor.
Yeah, it was a real sort of
thing. What do you have to do to get the cane?
I was being insolent to a teacher in class.
So they could just hit the shit out of you for that.
Yeah, I was kicked out for talking back.
Oh, but see...
But I was caned by a teacher that wasn't even there, who was just in charge of caning.
Oh.
Like, that wasn't his only job. He also did science.
Oh, sure, science and executioner.
Right. But he brought me into, he was one of the teachers that told me, kept on telling me, he said something to the effect of, like, John Lennon's auntie said to him, you'll never make money out of playing guitar.
Yeah.
Said something like, you'll never make money out of telling your jokes, so why don't you just shut up, or something like that. He said one of those sentences was... Very. And now, my mother was a school teacher at my school. And maybe 10 years after I finished school, her car had broken down and I was in Sydney for whatever reason. So I went to pick my mum up from her work. And I waited out the front of his office. You know? And then I went, he goes, oh, hello, how are you? I haven't seen you for, he's super friendly. And I went, he goes, what are you doing with yourself? And I went, I'm making a living out of telling jokes, right? Like, like, you revert. All these years I'd built up in my head totally of what to I would kid. Say to this man.
Yeah, it's impossible.
And then he said, your mother said you. Congratulations. And he couldn't have been.
No, you don't understand. You said that this wouldn't happen and this didn't. Fuck you. Just fuck you.
Yeah, just, I want you to grumble and walk away like, ah. Oh. Why? I don't know how I thought it'd play out in the head, but in my head, I thought he'd be like, damn it, I was wrong. You know?
Okay, you get to cane me now, because this is how this works.
Yeah, Mr. McKibben or something. He's probably dead by now.
It's very possible. I mean, like, you know, what you've just described, they cane you, you'll never make money doing this, and then just cue Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall. Just like, way to keep kids down. But do you... do you think that
are we announced who I am yet? I'm Jim Jefferies.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think we've done that in this podcast.
Well, there's an intro that we tack on.
I have a TV show on FXX, 10 o'clock on Wednesdays.
Yeah, 10 o'clock Wednesdays, FXX.
Legit.
But the... I wonder if, is it good to be challenged in that way? Or is it... like, sometimes I think it's, you should never do that. But then at the same time, something about you was challenged by that, and then so then you went out and did
it. Yeah, I think there's got to be a little bit... Look, my whole life, and this, as sad as it sounds, is sticking it up people. Do you use that term in this country?
Yeah. No, we don't, but yeah, I know what you mean.
You know what I mean? It's just like the easy way, the more common modern way of saying it is haters are your motivators. That's what the young kids say now.
Yeah.
But I love it when... I found out that with success... money wasn't as exciting as I thought it would be. I thought having money would be a big deal because I grew up poor.
Yeah.
And then when I got money, it's nice money and it helps and all that type of stuff. And I much rather have money than not have money. But I thought it would be a wonderful, amazing experience. And it wasn't
as... like every morning you just get up and jump out of your bed and just swim through a pile of money.
But it's also that whole thing, I can buy whatever I want to a certain extent. Now, like the other day I was looking at like something in a comic book store, which was like a predator head. Right? And I went, I could just buy that. When I was poor, I wouldn't. But then your brain goes, this is how hoarding starts. Now I'm going to have this shit in my house.
Well, it's those fantasies that you have when you don't have money and you go, oh man, if I had money, I could buy that predator head. And then when you can, you're like, what am I going to do with that a predator head?
Yeah, exactly.
With the 9 other predator heads that I bought.
And what's people going to think when they come over? They're going to think I'm a bit of a jerk who bought a...
The important thing is we can never be happy.
Yeah. I have found a little bit of happiness they say the best revenge is living well. Anyone who says that you would never make it or says that something you do is shit or some... like, even with my TV show now, when I got to the second season, I felt like I stuck it up a few people who said the first season wasn't that good or something. You know what I mean? And I really believed in the show. And then, you know, it's... I think it was... Judd Apatow was saying that his entire career, in an article recently, has been revenge for Freaks and Geeks. Being canceled.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I 100% part, you know, the whole reason that I started all the Nerdist stuff was partially like, well, you know, I just want to make stuff that makes me happy. The other part was like, for years I couldn't get work and, you know, agents didn't want me, the business was done with me, and it was just like every rejection was like, fuck you, I'm going to make my own thing. So you can go fuck you. You can just go fuck yourself, okay?
I would go for audition after Mr. audition McKibben. And in the end I just wrote my own TV show.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, I thought I'm not going to audition anymore because there's never been on a call sheet, we want a slightly overweight pale Australian. That has never been the description of a character that any American is sketched down. If they want an Australian, he's going to have sandy blonde hair and he's hey, dude, like, I don't know. Yeah. I just have an American accent for some reason. But it's
that's
never,
how bad we are with
and
our
then,
Australian
but my
casting.
Agents are always like, but you go in there and convince them that you're the guy. And it's like, well, you're behind the eight ball already. So
that does not happen very often, by the way, where you can convince them that you're the guy. Yeah. Like, they have an idea in their head, and the second they see you, sort of like, you know, they say, like, you know, human beings will decide within 7 seconds whether or not they want to have sex with someone when they meet them. Mm. It's exactly the same thing in the casting process. Mm. You would have to essentially, I feel like you would have to dematerialize and phase your body through the wall and back and be like, look, I'm a wizard, for them to go, holy fuck, we have to have this guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, they've pretty much decided.
And I cast people for my show and I'm as bad as they are.
Well, from their point of view, they don't have a lot of time. They got to cast something. Yeah. You just need someone to fill the role. If you don't have, unfortunately, a lot of time to make it. It's just like there's going to be a person out there who's perfect when they walk in.
I'm my first name drop of the day, John Ratzenberger, who's in my show, who's Cliff from Cheers.
Yeah, John Ratzenberger.
Hey, Jimmy. So he wrote his own role in Cheers. It's quite a famous story. Cliff Clavin didn't exist. He auditioned for the part of Norm. Now, may I say that Cliff Clavin and John Ratzenberger in character are very close in real life, right? And so he went in there and they went, like, he obviously read for Norm and he didn't, you know, obviously he's not Norm.
Yeah.
Right?
He's not.
And then as he was leaving, he went, yeah, do you have a Barry Know-It-All? And they went, sorry? A Barry Know-It-All, just a guy that just gives facts and figures that aren't quite right. And they're like, how would that go? The Romans invented Barry Know-It-Alls.
That's fucking incredible.
And they wrote the part in for him.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Oh, that makes me happy. It makes me happy because it's always nice when a performer gets even a molecule of power in a business where you essentially most of the time
I have a John Ratzenberger story from about 10 days ago. So this is quite fresh. I was in Kansas. I'm on tour at the moment. I was in Kansas doing a show. John was off in Kansas doing a Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing that we have at work where, look, I'm a taken guy, but you still look at all the female extras and you make a mental note within 7 seconds whether you'd have whether you'd have sex with them or not. That's just, these are 12-hour days.
You file it away. You're not going to do anything, but you just file it away.
Yeah, you'd like to go, all right, if I could. And I've made it, I have a decision now at work whether a girl is too young to sleep with, right? Because I don't want to sleep with them too young.
Sure.
Right? And this is my gauge. When she meets John, does she recognize him from A, Cheers, or B, as Hammy the Pig from Toy Story?
Is Hammy the Pig too young?
It's Hammy the Pig's too young.
Too young. Cheers.
Yeah, but they really do. They go, okay, you don't know that guy, Cliff Clavin from Cheers?
What?
And then like, what? What? And then he goes, hey, Woody, there's Buzz Lightyear. And then they lose their shit, and right. You're like, oh, my God, you're
off the
young.
List. Off the list.
So anyway, he was doing a Comic-Con to sign pictures of the pig, I guess, right? And he's a real people person, so I think he just enjoys the meet and greets. And I thought he could talk all day, you know? And so he rang me, like, he started sending me texts. Like, I didn't know he was in town. The text started going, hey, you know, there's a good barbecue place on 4th.
I love you. You have to read his text in that
right?
voice.
And
yeah.
I'm reading his text going, what, is he really following which town I'm in and telling me? Well, and then he goes, what time's your show? I'm going to show up, right? And then I went, oh, right, he's in Kansas. Oh, you don't expect to bump into him in Kansas. He shows up at the gig and he goes, oh, you've been signing pictures all day with Margot Kidder. Right, Lois Lane, the original.
Yes.
And well, not the original, there's another one. There's probably 90 off the TV series. But so he goes, I invited her to your gig and she was really excited to come, but she's so fucking crazy that I just stood her up.
Oh no. Oh, rats
Ratzenberger. Standing up Margot Kidder.
He goes, I asked her in the morning. By the afternoon, I was like, I'm not going to a gig with her. Right?
No.
So now Margot Kidder is just stuck in the middle of Kansas somewhere.
And also, may we add...
Clark? That, is Clark although, around here?
Although he was never in a scene with her, John Ratzenberger was in two Supermans.
Yeah, he was in Superman 2.
With two different roles. No, he's the one that when they have the nuclear warhead, who's the guy on the panel...
Yeah.
Right? When they're trying to do the different like angle for it to blow up the fault
and he's,
line.
And he's also in
and he's also the
Superman 2 and that working for NASA.
He's working for NASA.
Yeah.
He might have been promoted through, but I think he's two different guys, but he's in two Supermans.
I wonder if we talked about that the last time you were on, because that I feel like I've talked about that with someone else, and I can't imagine,
it's probably me.
I can't imagine who else I would have been like, hey, that John Ratzenberger was in Superman 2.
So so he came along to the gig, and so I went on stage and I told a story about, okay, so in the TV show, my father's being played by George Lazenby.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Right? Who I tried to cast Paul Hogan, and Paul Hogan, I tried going over to his house and everything. his agent like wanted him to do it. Paul hadn't worked in years. And his agent was like, his manager was like, I think he'll do it. He just needs a bit of convincing. And then one day he said he would do it, and then he changed his mind. And I thought if I just went over to his house and took him out for a beer, you know, that's how I thought.
Yeah, of course, but that's, you know, that's... I think that is the what an American would think that an Australian would go for. Like, yeah. Just take him out for a beer and he'll do it.
I'll just go meet him and take him out for a beer. I think maybe he was having some marriage problems or something. He wasn't up for fucking...
Did he know you were coming to his house?
No.
So you just showed up at Paul Hogan's house.
But someone gave me his fucking address. I didn't get enough stars map. Like, I was given an inside scoop, right?
Hey, Paul, Jim Jefferies, want to go out for a beer?
Mm. I knew he'd read the script, and I knew he knew who I was, and I thought, anyway, that didn't happen.
Is there still a lot of Crocodile Dundee money left?
He owned the films.
Oh, then yes.
Yeah, and they're the most played. Like, you know when they always talk about like the Police, Every Breath You Take. At any given time in the world, that song is being played on radio somewhere.
Somewhere, yeah.
The Paul Hogan movies are the TV equivalent. Crocodile Dundee and Crocodile Dundee 2 are on television somewhere, whether it be in an airplane or in Asia, or they're huge through like Asia, like Japan.
So he just,
and all that.
He just to get out of bed every day, he just gets a check every day for.
So
that.
The most televised movies in the modern era or something.
Wow.
And when you think about it, they are always on some channel. The first two. the one in LA doesn't. Because the one in LA was like. He's a fish out of water. He moves to New York in the first one. The second one's like, he's a fish out of water. It's basically Australia versus America.
Yeah.
He should have taken it to maybe London or maybe some other country.
Or space.
Or something. But just going, what's way different from New York? LA.
Yeah.
He'll never know what's going on. Like, by that stage, his character had been living in America for like 15, 20 years.
Yeah, so it's... I think the better story is he's got to go back to Australia and reacclimate.
Yeah, yeah. And he's just like, I'll have a frappuccino with a... What? You don't have that here?
Get out, get out! That's not a knife, and neither is this. So I had to get rid of my knife. Well, so Paul Hogan was out.
So Paul Hogan was out.
So then you went to, like,
My casting agent was like, well, I said, we auditioned some other... There was another guy who played the father in the movie The Castle. I don't know if you've ever seen The Castle. It's like my favorite Australian comedy.
Oh, yeah, the guy at his house.
Yeah, the house, yeah.
Oh, my God, I think I saw that when it... Because that was like the 90s, right?
Yeah, it's a funny film. It was Eric Banner's first movie. Eric Banner had like four lines in it.
Wow, yeah, before,
and Eric Banner
that.
Was still a stand-up comic, and now he's like... Well, he's been a bit cold at the moment, but he became a big Hollywood star, didn't he?
I don't think I knew that he was a comic.
My first ever gig when I was 17, I did an open spot. Eric Banner, and I didn't do another gig until I was 23. Eric Banner was the MC.
How was he?
He's an impersonator. If you go on, there's a lot of comedy impersonators. It's a lot of like Arnold Schwarzenegger's and stuff like that. But that's probably why he did Chopper so good. Like his impersonation of the guy was real. And so he's very good at accents and stuff like that, but he was just an impersonator, yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah. Very okay. popular. He was on Australian TV, like in sketch comedy shows and stuff, yeah.
I always wonder, I guess maybe if some people, if their heart's not in it, but once they get famous, it's like, oh, now you can go perform in big spaces and do... I always just assume, like, everyone wants to do comedy all the time, but some people just
go... I think what the thing was, he was better at TV than he was at stand-up. I don't think his stand-up was extra special good, and he was one of those guys who wanted to get into television.
Into television, so he was a stand-up.
Yeah, and he used the stand-up to get his way there.
Okay, so then George Lazenby gets into the equation.
Okay, so then that we go through a few more lists. Now, may I add also for my mother, now I've been dubbed a misogynistic comic over the years for jokes that I've said. I don't believe that I am in real life, but I have said many, many misogynistic things, probably more so than most comedians. And to audition for my mother, we had Helen Reddy.
Helen Reddy?
Helen Reddy auditioned to play my mum. She didn't get the role, but you know who Helen Reddy is?
When I was a kid, my parents used to go to Vegas a lot for my dad's, because my dad was a professional bowler. There was a lot of bowling stuff in Vegas. Helen Reddy was one of the shows that my parents took me to as a small child. I remember I have flashes of shows in the 70s.
Yeah.
Of like Helen Reddy, Tony Orlando, and Dawn. I saw Steve Martin in Vegas.
Oh, wow.
Johnny Carson, Joan Rivers. So, but Helen Reddy was one of the shows that I saw.
Helen Reddy was the quintessential woman feminist from the 70s.
Yeah, like she was the sort of musical vocal for the women's lib movement.
I Am Woman is still a huge... Not many people knew she was Australian, but I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar. They still sing that and do parodies of it. But anyway, so Helen Reddy was auditioned to play my mother. In the end, we cast... The only woman that I wanted to play the role, like, this is the only part that I actually said, look, make sure you fly this person out. I don't take it out of my money. I don't care. And FX were like, we're not flying anyone out. We have to fly in business class. And so I said, please, I really want... And we got a lady called Magda Sabansky, who's a huge star in Australia. And you'll know her as... The only thing she ever did in America was she was the farmer's wife in the movie Babe. And Babe, Pig in the City.
And then Babe goes to L.A.
Like, yeah. So she's playing my mum. Now, my mum, all through my stand-up and over the years, has been described as a morbidly obese woman, which she is in real life. And also, Magda is a very overweight lady. If we get a third season, we have a problem because Magda just signed a huge deal with Jenny Craig to lose like 100 pounds.
That's good, right?
And I'm happy for her, but I don't want her to lose the weight because that makes my life harder. I have to write into the script while my mum's lost so much weight, you know. Anyway, so that's what we got for mum. And then they gave us a few Australian names. I wanted the guy off the castle, and then someone just went, well, George Lazenby's available. And I was like, fucking James Bond.
You gotta.
Let's do it, man. If I can't have Crocodile Dundee, I'll take James Bond.
You take James Bond.
So,
I mean, Crocodile Dundee is really the Australian version of James Bond, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. You know, you can see how they're pretty similar.
And so Lazenby, I told this on a podcast the other day. I think I told him, but anyway, I'll tell it again. But it's Lazenby, I'm sitting next to him the first day I meet him, and I said, hey George, because I, old man, I didn't want to be rude or anything.
Yeah.
I said, do you ever fuck a Bond girl? Right? And he goes, be easier to tell you which ones I haven't fucked.
Wow!
Right? And then he goes, they all come to the conventions.
Oh!
So you got to think that George is the only one out of all the James Bonds who still goes to the conventions.
It is like, he's figured it out.
All the women, they only really do those movies. There's, some of them, obviously, are bigger stars, Halle Berry and stuff like that, and people who have gone on to things.
Sure.
But for the most part, they're one and done. They're normally like the equivalent of a Victoria's Secret model who gets his one gig and then they never act again. Right?
I hope he had sex with Denise Richards like last year.
Yeah, but he hasn't had sex like in a Motel 6.
Oh, like in a small town.
Yeah, like at a convention with all of his headshots on the side of the bed.
He's trying to say he's shaken, not stirred, while he's hacking
wearing,
up
he's
him.
Wearing the tuxedo where he's done a sketch from the day before.
No. Oh, wow.
So about the third or fourth day, I've heard every story that George has told me, every woman that he's fucked. I had a great nickname for him because he told me a story once that went like this. It was like, oh, you back in the 60s. He was the number one male model in the world in the 1960s. So it was like Mad Men back then.
Also, in the 60s, people were just giving it away.
They were
left
just
and
giving
right.
away.
Everyone, every human being.
Our generation is the worst. There was the generation, the 70s of free love and all that type of stuff. And then the 80s was like, you know, hey, we've invented the pill. We can all fuck each other.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then the 90s came along and, hey!
none of that. Don't do that anymore.
Right? Where they were just, every time we turned on TV, it was AIDS! Right? Now, in 2000, it's like we've sort of forgotten about AIDS. Kids are all taking pictures of their genitals and they're all having threesomes.
We've got back.
Our generation was fucked over sexually worse than anyone.
I was terrified. I was terrified of sex.
I had sex with one girl who I think was a virgin, got tested. I went and got tested. She probably had sex with one other guy. There was nothing wrong with her. Since then, I've done some extraordinarily risky stuff where I would have thought that I should be just dropped dead as soon as I walk out of the room. But it was the AIDS thing. They really... We used to have this thing in Australia, this advert for AIDS in Australia, which was the Grim Reaper. And the Grim Reaper was bowling. And he's holding his, what is he?
The scythe.
His scythe in one hand and his big cloak, and you couldn't see like a skeleton face. And then he was bowling.
I'm glad the Grim Reaper finds time to go bowling.
Yeah, but what was he bowling? The pins were made out of people who had AIDS.
Jesus Christ.
So there was all these pins, and it was like, AIDS can affect anything. And then the ball was just knocking people. It can affect anyone, right? But then there was like little kids, and then there was like a grandma there with a cane, like, the ball hit her. like you wouldn't do an ad like that now. We used to think that you could get AIDS like shaking people's hands.
Or sharing the same bowling ball,
yeah,
like same, death.
Yeah.
Not the case.
And Death would just, he was bowling for AIDS-y people.
Now, was that the commercials in Australia are a little more blunt than they are here, though.
Oh, yeah, cigarette packets are just pictures of lungs destroyed and hearts and like a picture of a guy with a stroke.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and it's, you know what? I'm all for the cigarette bans and that cigarettes are bad for you and all that stuff. But the adverts for me go too far. Just focus on the lung cancer. The one that people really get done. Or the one with the... Focus on that guy and the lung cancer guy. Stop telling me I'm going to lose a foot. I've known so many people and no one's lost a fucking foot. Right? I know in the ad you'll show someone who's lost a foot and they're putting their foot on and they're like, how much do you want to smoke? I've lost my foot. But I just think... Like soda could have the same arguments
of
as
course.
The foot.
Of course.
More people lose their feet from diabetes.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, how many people a year, like, choke on a corn chip or something?
Yeah, it's,
you know,
like, I mean? Okay, I get the lung cancer, I guess the ant, and besides that, the one now with, like, the one's ripping its tooth out. Like, how much does it cost for a pack of menthols? And why does that advert really focus on the menthols? He's like, pack of menthols, please.
I think people accidentally buy menthols. Like, oh, I didn't see the green. God damn it.
Yeah.
What am I supposed to do with this?
So anyway, I'm sitting in the chair. Oh, this is my nickname for George. So George would tell stories that goes like this. You go, oh, I was at a party. There's just naked women all over the floor. Peter Sellers' cock was over there. John Lennon's cock was over there. And you just did whatever you want.
Oh my God.
Right? And then my nickname for him is Bicurious George. Right? Which is sweet. And he doesn't quite get why I call him. What are you talking about? Anyway, so this is my favorite story. And then I'll get back to the John Ratzenberger in Kansas story in a second.
Sure.
So I'm sitting in the makeup chair, and on one side of me I have John Ratzenberger, and on one side of me I have George Lazenby.
Okay.
And they're trying to meet some common ground. John doesn't chase tail. He's got a wife and all that other stuff. George still tries to chase tail, right? And he goes, hey, George, where'd they meet that Majesty's Secret Service? And he goes, oh, I was all over Europe, mate. All over Europe, everywhere. Oh, yeah, I love Europe. My favorite place is France. You like France? It's my favorite place in Europe. He goes, oh, yeah, I fucking love France. Oh, yeah. Well, what's your favorite bit of France? And then George went, well, there's a place in Italy where you can fuck the prostitutes by the side of the road.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That's his favorite bit of France.
In Italy.
A place in Italy where you can fuck the prostitutes by the side of the road.
Favorite
now, you got to also picture that there's three makeup and hair people in there who are all women in their late 20s, early 30s, just fluffing our hair. And I go, when you say by the side of the road, George, are you like just on the tarmac or are they in fields?
You need to elaborate.
Yeah, you can't just say that because I'm just pitching just John like fucking next to George next to roadkill. Just
anyone here, it's the side of the road.
Yeah, yeah,
sure, right. It's great here being in Italy, France. There's so much that you, I don't know if it's good or bad, but to be, he must be in his late 70s, right?
He's mid-70s, yeah.
Mid-70s. So at a point, I don't know if it's good or bad to be at a point in your life where you can pretty much say anything because people are like, he's old. Because that, to me, is sort of like, that's the near the end of the road. Like, yeah, you almost kind of want people to be like, no, get offended because I'm still young and vibrant and threatening. Not old and like, oh, yeah,
when you hit on a young girl, you don't want her to go, oh, bless you, I'll kiss you on the cheek. Yeah. Oh, you know what I mean?
Oh, no, you
no, I really want to put it in you. So I'm at Kansas. I'm on stage. I'm doing a bit of... And John comes out and goes, hey, enough. And the audience loses their fucking shit, right? Because we're in Kansas.
Right.
And then afterwards, I finish signing and all that. By the time I finish doing photos and everything, it's past midnight. And John goes, oh, yeah, we got to find some barbecue while we're here in Kansas, right? And so he rings around. He finds out that there's a place 20 miles away from where we are, so on the real outskirts of Kansas, there's a barbecue place that's still open. So me and John Ratzenberger, we travel out to fucking... This is like 10 days ago. We travel to the outskirts of Kansas. We go into this barbecue place, which is... The food was all right, but it was like a cafeteria. You had to get a tray and then go, yeah, and I'll have some cornbread and I'll have... And they put it all like...
So good.
Yeah, and it was like that. And there was no... There was no one really in the restaurant. It was like... It was... Well, yeah, so... And then there was a bar next door that was attached that you could walk through this restaurant into this bar, right? And I said, oh, let's go get one beer and we'll go home, right? We go into the bar to get a beer, and it was like a scene in a movie where the needle in the record goes, eh. Now, it was only black people in this bar, like, and about 50 of them, but it wasn't like, I've walked into like black clubs in Manhattan where there's hip hop music playing and stuff like that. It wasn't like that. Every black person in this bar was over the age of 60. And the music was like, let's get it on.
Oh, yeah.
Woo!
Yeah.
And they're all sitting there having a good time. Super black, like weaves everywhere. And I for the first time ever, I walked into a bar and thought, oh, I don't think they want us here, right? And John didn't go, hey, let's go. And then like we went up to the bar and the lady behind the bar was like, you boys want to have a drink here? And we're like... Yeah. I think I was the first Australian to ever walk into this room. Definitely.
But
right?
You have Cliff Clavin with you.
No, but that's the whole thing. I was going, John, we should get going. And Justin, John's like, yeah, maybe you're right. And then one of them goes, Norm! Like, he doesn't get it right, but close enough.
He's in the right reference sphere.
You drink in a bar with a main cast member from Cheers, you don't pay for drinks, everything. By the end of it, I'm talking every single person in that bar, arm in arm, where everybody knows your name. And the owner said, I'll drive you boys home.
That's so nice.
It was the best experience ever.
And is John cool with that stuff?
He loves it. And I think he knew, because I was getting nervous, I think he knew it'll kick in a second.
Oh, right. Yeah. And he's kind of talking a little bit louder. Hey, what are you guys doing here? Yeah.
They all came up and did photos, and they all did, like, they're all drunk. And there's like this old lady who's like 80s, like, where's my mail? And he goes, oh, I'll get it to you tomorrow.
I love that. That's fantastic. The moral of the story is always have John Ratzenberger with you wherever you go.
Every single person in that bar got a great story where they went home and they told it to their significant other or their kids or whatever. And they're like, what? That bar? The guy from Cheers. Yeah, he was in there.
No. Cheers. All right, hand me the pig. Hand me the pig? How was the barbecue?
It was good.
I'm sure you tour enough around America to know, but the regional barbecue wars are very intense. Yeah. Texas barbecue is different than Tennessee barbecue, which is different than Kansas barbecue.
And damn so straight.
It's a big deal.
You made me want barbecue now.
I know, now I want it too, but yeah. There's not really great barbecue in LA.
I just do that thing where I salivate. Oh, Baby Blues is all right.
Is it good?
Yeah, Baby Blues is good.
I haven't been there.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I should not say that there aren't things when I haven't.
It's a bit more costly, but that's the only one that's like a proper...
What? That concerns us not. We can buy predator heads.
No, I'm just saying for the listeners.
Oh, yeah. That concerns us not. We... don't know all of them personally.
I was with Al Jackson, who's a comedian friend of mine, who he was actually in an episode of Legit recently. But me and Al were out drinking Miami, where he lived. But he'd just been on the road for like a month or something. Like he'd been supporting someone, and he'd just come back from somewhere in the Midwest or something. And he's back in a bar in Miami, and we bought two shots and two beers. And it came to like $24, right? Pretty reasonable,
yeah,
right? And he'd been away for too long, even though he lived there and he lost his shit. He went, are you fucking kidding me?
$24.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, that's the normal price in this town. That should be like $4. I remember once going to one of the Carolinas. Or whatever. No, maybe not one of the Carolinas. Something deep in the south, like an Alabama or something like that, right? It was a problem. And I went to a strip club, and lap dances were $5.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was like, well, that's a... The women looked horrendous, but I can't pass up a bargain. But then, like, once every hour or so, they had a deal where you got, for your $5, you got a lap dance and a shot. And all the girls walked around the stage holding the shots. Now, the shots were obviously watered down bits of crap, right? But you're like, oh, I gotta fucking... And this girl just rested in a cesarean scar and flicked it into my mouth.
$5.
Well, I don't know. She sort of did it there. She goes, get down to my legs. And then she went like that.
And then just spilled it?
I put my mouth over it. I sort of went, thank you. thank you. This has been the best night ever. I appreciate everything you do.
I better go back to my Hampton Inn or whatever small town hotel.
I got a new theory on strippers. This is a bit, so I'm not going to lie to you and say, but it's a new bit. But it's basically, whenever you go to female strip clubs, like you go to female male strip clubs, and all these dance around poles, and you want them to do disgusting things to each other.
Yeah.
Women don't want that. Women want to see a guy in like a fireman's outfit who can dance, or a guy in a tuxedo who can dance, or whatever. And then he'll take all of his clothes off, and he'll still have the fireman's hat on, or he'll still have a tool belt.
Right.
Because even when you're naked, women want to know that you have a job.
Well, what about in Vegas, all of this strange... You as an Australian are like a bizarre commodity in Vegas. All of the male Australian strip shows, Thunder from Down Under,
Thunder from
Australian, like their dicks are different somehow.
I've pitched a lot of sitcoms, and I pitched a sitcom once that I was the manager of the Thunder Down Under, and that I used to be their main dancer. And now I just, and all the guys are gay. And,
and you just, but you just like, you were like, I don't want to dance anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I still did the choreography.
Oh, that's a great idea.
It's not
a bad idea for a sitcom. That's not bad.
And it was all the hijinks around Vegas with me and the muscle guys. And
I can't figure out what it is. I guess it's because Australia is just exotic enough. And then the accents. The accent is just close enough.
Yeah, and not as evil as South African.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they would never have that evil South African descended from the Ananda. That one, they would never.
Don't you look at my cock?
I know. I don't want to do that. Why would you make me do that to you? It's like I've got so much material on the Oscar Pistorius stuff, but I watch it at the moment, and the excuse that he's making is... there's like a person who, a security guy from the estate, who said, I heard a woman scream and then I heard the shots. And then he's like, oh no, that was me screaming because someone was breaking in and then I shot them. You know what I mean? And so now there's a big debate in the court case whether Oscar Pistorius screams like a woman or not.
Oh my God.
And they've asked his ex-girlfriends, like, have you ever heard Oscar scream? Yes, I have. How did he scream? Like a man.
Wow.
Like, they're all like...
Are they trying to get him... Is this like the bloody glove? They're trying to get him to scream, and he's like,
there's
got to
be one moment where he just gets up on the stand and... I'm a girl.
Just really trying to... Oh, yeah, my throat's a little dry. If I had some more water, I could really...
Yeah, it's been... Oh, I don't know. I don't scream like a woman like I used to.
I mean... I haven't watched any of the I don't have any fascination with any of the trials, that or the Casey Anthony trial or any of the trials. I don't, because it's all such a bummer to me that I just, when I go home, I just want to see fake pretend.
When they get off, it's sad. I'm pretty sure with Casey Anthony, that one really upset me. This Oscar Pistorius one, it's gonna be interesting because in South Africa, they don't have juries. It's just one guy who makes the decision. The judge is going to make the decision whether or not he's guilty. And so when it's just one bloke, you'd, fuck it, hell. That's all you'd do is look at that guy's face all day and you'd be he hates me.
I would not. God, I would, what a strange justice. I mean, obviously it must work for them, I guess, if they have it down there. But it
then
feels...
there's things like Casey Anthony wouldn't have gotten away with it, because when you got 12 people and it all has to be unanimous... You know, but obviously then also the flip side is that there's probably a lot of innocent people who get the guilty,
sure,
you know, thing. But I assume there'd be probably less people who are guilty who get away with. I don't know.
Maybe. If I were on trial for something, I would be terrified to think that there was one guy that it could just be like, well, this is 50-50.
Oh, I just know that there'd be some like religious person who'd seen one of my DVDs. it would just hate me.
I have this really crazy, irrational fear. And I think it's probably just from watching a lot of, I don't know, Law and Order or something when I was a kid. But that you are on trial for something and you really didn't do it.
Yeah.
And no one believes you, and everything you say just makes you sound guilty.
I have this theory at the moment when you're right and everyone else is wrong, right? Like, so Fred Phelps died the other day.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I'm an atheist, right? He was probably the most hateful person that ever lived. The Western Baptist. Westboro Baptist. The guy who used to protest in front of gay people's funerals and soldiers' funerals because he thought the war had something to do with us being too nice to gays.
Something, yeah. I don't...
He was so strict. He used to just make up things from the Bible that he decided were like his deal, right? But what if he was the only one who was right?
Oh, no.
Like, and he was right, and we're all wrong. And then, like, so what, is just him and God in heaven? And God's just going, you're the only one who got me, man.
That's what he was hoping.
Yeah.
But right now, he's probably skewered on the end of large demonic cock spit.
Yeah, or as I think, he probably just... didn't wake up. And,
and then that was it forever. It.
I would like there to be an afterlife. I really would. I would like there to be an afterlife.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Just for a minute.
You don't want a whole afterlife.
Yeah, where there's just an atheist sitting at a desk like this who gets to tell you you're wrong.
I feel like I should technically host an afterlife.
Yeah.
Like I should do an after
just
show.
A guy who just a woman rocks up in a burqa and goes, hey, you wasted your time. There's no...
Sorry. And then that's it.
And then just you have a minute to think about it.
Oh, no. All these choices are... Damn it.
Just flashbacks of every Sunday that you fucked up because of religion.
I don't... I would love to feel like that were the case, that there's, you know... But I don't think... I guess I just sort of feel like, well, the lights go out and then that's pretty much it. And, you know, that's fine.
I don't want there to be an afterlife. I don't want to live forever and miss people that have existed in my life or hang out with old people that I've, you know, it's such a morbid thing. I'm sure he's looking down on us.
Right.
And he's, you know.
You just hear how many ghosts George Lazenby fucked.
Didn't Carling do a bit on whenever you're at funerals that someone goes, I bet you he's up there looking down on us and he's just having a good laugh. No one ever goes, I bet you he's down there and he's in a lot of pain. And
I bet you he's right here just trying to poking his hand through us, not really understanding that he's dead. Someone's got to complete some task so we can cross over to the other side, but no one knows who that is or what's going on.
See, I don't believe in any of that. I'm a skeptic on most everything, but I have had moments where I've met like people who claim to be psychic that have said things that have like I've gone, ooh.
Yeah, I've had that experience too.
Yeah, and that one, I feel like there's people who have a lot of intuition.
Yeah.
If it's another thing. Like my girlfriend knows when I'm up to no good or I'm having fun. That woman can sense when I'm having fun, and she can call up and she'll stop that fun right in the bud and tell me there's something in my child that's wrong that I have to fix.
Oh, and do you fix it?
I do. I try to.
Good for you.
But I'm
always annoyed though when they mean well. But when comedy clubs, you know, when a comic dies and they go, rest in peace, you know, David Brenner, whoever just died, make God laugh. And I always go,
that's a laugh factory.
Using the construct of religion, God is an omniscient being that you could, and comedy relies on the element of surprise. You could never, ever, ever possibly.
Yeah. And also, what's God laughing at that he's killed another one? you know, he's probably up there in heaven right now making God laugh. I get depressed about death in the sense that I have enough self-hate, and I think I really in my heart of hearts think there'd be 20 people at my funeral. And I might be wrong, hundreds might show up, but I don't know why, but whenever I'm at funerals, I'm so selfish, I'm standing around going, no one would show up.
Did you hear Jim Jeffries died? Good, we're not going.
Yeah, no one would show up. There'd be like FX would like, we'll play the season again.
You'd get the, they'd just send as a condolence gift like the first two seasons of Louis.
I'd get the first two seasons of Louis put in like a hamper and they'd all be fanned out. Like in a thing, and then underneath all the little cuttings of stuff, there'd be like one Sons of Anarchy.
Don't send him all the Sons of Anarchy. Send him once. Send him season three.
Send him Louis. Send him a little homage of what he could have been if he tried.
How is the next season?
We're five episodes in. Episode six is this coming out right now or tomorrow? Or?
This is coming out soon. No, actually, it says that we've been asked to post this on May 7th. Actually.
Oh, so we're in the episodes at the moment that involve my parents coming out to visit, which are a couple of my favorites. But we got some. Since I'm on the Nerdist, and I did say on the Joe Rogan podcast that you guys are the least nerdy people I've met. I don't take that as an insult.
Who, us? We are?
Yeah. I said, are you doing any other podcasts? I'm doing the Nerdist, and I said, I like those guys, but they're not nerds in my book. They're like cool guys. I go, when I was young, nerds had like club feet and flaky skin and all that type of stuff.
Club feet? You know, I have to...
You're better looking than me, and I consider myself to be more nerdy than you, but if I couldn't pull it off... I'm not cool enough to pull off being a nerd in modern day society.
You gotta see the. I just posted a picture. I was so thrilled. Someone posted a picture of me from like 2003 when I was like overweight and like blotchy. And so if you saw the picture of that guy, you'd be like, oh, I get it now. Rogan is a guy that I would. I feel like we always just kind of miss each other. Like, he's never been on the podcast, never been on his, and we should totally do each other's podcast.
He's a good guy.
He's a great guy.
I'm going to tell you something. Here we go, Nerdist scoop here. Actually, I've told other people, but...
We'll pretend.
But you'll like this. Okay, episode 8, Carrie Fisher.
What?
Boom.
What?
And you know how you get her to be in your TV show?
Ask her. Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people that don't ever, like, oh, we could never get them. Why not?
She's not playing Carrie Fisher. She's playing an actual part.
Yeah.
But all the scenes were with me, and I spent 12-hour days. I chatted Star Wars. I have a signed, in my pinball room, I have a signed 1977 Star Wars almanac right? Like the little, like, no, annual.
Yeah.
Back to the Future almanac.
The Grey Sports almanac?
Yeah, like a proper one, and I framed and everything. And she wrote on the cover, she's, you know, quirky woman. She wrote to Jim Jefferies, the Dark Lord of Extreme Foreplay, Love and Pussy. Carrie Fisher.
I mean, listen, it's so nice that...
It's got to be a one-off,
it's
right?
So nice that Princess Leia included love and pussy.
Love and pussy.
It says, I don't want you to just have love or just pussy. I want you to have love and pussy.
Love and pussy. And it's weird when you hang out with her. You guys probably heard of a webpage called The Force, right? Where they just talk about Star Wars.
Sure.
And Star Wars. Allegedly, I was on Opie and Anthony and I blew something... All that happened was when I was with Carrie Fisher, she said to me that she's going for 6 months to London to film the new Star Wars, right?
Yeah.
And I thought that wasn't news because I knew she wasn't going to be in the new Star Wars, right?
Yeah.
But then the six-month thing was meant to be like a big... Jim Jefferies announced she'd be there for 6 months, so it means she's doing a major role.
Right.
Right? And so it's like I fucking ruined Star Wars. I just, my Twitter filled up with, what the fuck, man? And fucking tell us more. And I'm like, that's all I know, really.
Well, at least no one got mad at you for spoilers. Yeah, but wouldn't you want to know that she's in it? That sounds like a good...
Well, no, but they already knew she was in it.
They just didn't know how much.
They didn't know how much. And I did some mean joke. She's very nice. I said that episode 7 is meant to be straight after episode 6. I said, I don't know. There must have been some disturbance in the Force where everyone started looking like Palpatine. This can't be like the next day.
I mean, there's a... Whoa, what just... They just use old footage and then, whoa, what just happened? Oh, no.
Or like, this is the scene. Hey, Han Solo, Leia, Luke. That was a terrible fire.
the Death Star is just basically like it's just like an aging ray. It doesn't destroy worlds; it just makes everyone older by a lot.
When you chat, like, have you met her? Have you had her on the podcast? Or anything?
I've never had her on the podcast, but I was pitching a show with Mark Hamill,
right?
That we were going to produce for Mark Hamill, so I know Mark.
When you chat with her, you forget that she's Hollywood royalty,
fucking way royalty.
Yeah, royalty, right? I was seeing that, and I was telling stories on Jimmy Kimmel Show, and I told a story about my mother. And actually, last night I was actually on the Jimmy Kimmel Show again. My mother actually rang me up after I told this story and went, "You have to go back on the Jimmy Kimmel Show and tell America that you're a liar."
Oh wow!
And I went, "What are you talking about? I watched that show. You just lied." And I went, "What did I lie about? I told the truth." And the thing was, I said that my mother got deep vein thrombosis, which is the disease you get from traveling in economy. I said that she got that while she was on a luxury cruise, right? And she goes, I did not get it on a luxury cruise. I got it at home. I was diagnosed on the cruise.
So you had to go on and make a retraction.
Yeah, so I said, I'd like to apologize. This show doesn't promote lies. My mother actually got a disease from not moving at home. So I was telling this story about how my mum getting really upset. Because as I said, I was sitting with Carrie Fisher like 12, 14 hours a day, just the two of us in this room. And she goes, ha. She goes, that's like my mother. My mother, she hates it when I talk on television. And then I was like, you can bring my mum to Debbie Reynolds. That doesn't seem like a fair battle.
You know who your mom is, right?
And then later on, DJ Qualls was telling a Lazenby story. And then it's like, oh, my dad's just the same. It's all about his conquests. And then you're like, Eddie Fisher, tell us a story about your stepmom, Elizabeth Taylor. Let's fucking do all these things.
So crazy.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. Well, going back to your Star Wars memorabilia, I have two pieces of pretty crazy Star Wars memorabilia.
All right.
I have an original crew t-shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Which has a...
Is that worth like $5,000, $6,000?
I don't know, actually. But it's the original... It's an original, like, Ralph McQuarrie design. And it's the one before they really knew...
Is it Blue Harvest, Revenge of the Sith?
There was a Revenge of the Jedi. So on that story, my friend in high school's dad was a messenger. And he got... Like, something got mixed up, and
his dad was a thief. He didn't bring all the stuff from his UPS truck, right?
His dad accidentally had delivered. It was something like there was a revenge. I don't know how what the mechanics were, but my friend almost ended up with a Revenge of the Jedi poster that was supposed to go somewhere else. And then in the end, he didn't get this Revenge of the Jedi poster. But anyway, so I have this Macquarie-designed Star Wars shirt and a chunk, a 3x3 chunk of the mid-range Millennium Falcon where they're, like, right before they go into the trench run.
Yeah.
It's the mid-range. It's like that mid-size one. It's a chunk. It's a little foam.
Did you buy these? Were these given to you?
They were gifts. They were given to me.
Who gave them to you?
My girlfriend, her dad worked on Star Wars, so I got some pretty sweet. And it's the kind of thing where I was like, oh, this shit's just in the garage. Like, what is it? Why is it? It belongs in a museum. Like, I don't know why the shit's just.
Ratzenberger worked on Empire Strikes Back, and he said that he wanted to ask out Carrie Fisher the whole time, but he was living in a squat in not paying rent that had rats in it.
Ratzenberger.
Yeah, he said, I didn't want to bring her back to the apartment with rats everywhere.
How about now?
And that's why I said, why don't you show up? She's coming here tomorrow. You can come here tomorrow and ask her out.
What you've basically just done is written the perfect Star Wars Cheers mashup fan fiction.
Well, in the Carrie Fisher episode, we also have Tom Arnold and Bob Saget.
Oh, Saget's great. And Tom's great, too.
Tom's a great guy.
They're both great.
Tom Arnold will tell you the best stories ever.
He's a guy that will just tell you 100% true things on stage.
Yeah.
100% true stories.
About Arnold Schwarzenegger.
The craziest
stories where you're like, oh, my God. Because he's like, Arnold Schwarzenegger's like one of his best mates.
Yeah. And the stories that I've heard about him and Roseanne that he's told on stage are nightmarish.
Yeah. So there's if you want like a Star Wars Full House sort of vibe to your show.
Star Wars Cheers Full House James Bond.
Yeah, yeah. Well, James Bond's not in that episode.
No, he's not.
We didn't chuck it up to us. But we got a lot of who else we got? Reese Darby.
Reese is great. Reese is going to be on our show this week.
One of my best buddies.
Yeah, he's great.
I convinced him to do it. He hadn't
I'm an adventurer.
He hadn't watched the show because he's my friend and doesn't want me to do well as friends. But he came along in my show. Have you? I don't know if you've seen it. But we got.
I watched some of it when you were on the last time.
Oh, we have a mentally challenged actor on our show called Rodney, who's got the mind of like a 9-year-old type of thing. And Reese showed up. He didn't know much about the show, and he's just, "What's going on?"
He had no idea.
He came up to me like most actors would, because we've been friends. He goes, "What is this? What's going on?"
Reese, he's such a. I can never tell where, how much is the character of Reese and how much is just Reese.
Reese is a character. I was 2 days ago. I was in the Magic Castle with Reese. We went along for his birthday, or his wife's birthday, and we went along to the Magic Castle, and turns out Reese has very exact opinions on magic.
Does he not like it?
No, that one's shit. He's no good. That one had no presence whatsoever. It was old hat, that David Copperfield thing. It's meant to be like you're a goth now, or like a man in a suit like Pelantella. And also me and Reese are shameless fucking stage hogs. Like, can we have someone come down? Me and Reese were fighting each other to get on. We both got on magic shows.
You're like,
There was one time when we need three people. Oh, we both got on. Me and Reese both standing
That's
up there.
That's so funny. You're like fucking well-paid professional comedians. Like, no, I'll get up there.
Yeah, the guy goes, what do you do for a living? And then we're like, Reese didn't tell him. I'm like, oh, I'm a stand-up comedian.
Oh, well, be funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Reese was like, oh, I just, you know, work around town. Something.
Doing
And then
things.
The thing was, so everyone sort of knew, he's more famous than me, and then the people knew who I was. And then, so the two of us standing up there, and then it was in a little room with like 40 people, and the guy who played Hurley off Lost was
yeah,
there.
Yeah, Jorge Garcia.
Yeah, he was there.
He's great.
He came down and said hello. And
what he's the best. What a great, so Reese was on at midnight, several months ago, and the next day I was flying out of LAX, and I ran into him at the airport, and there was a moment where I was like, I don't know if he remembers.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, hey, Reese, how's it going? He was like,
hello.
Oh, hello.
Yes, hello.
Good to see you.
No, I'm flying.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, then.
Yeah, that's exactly how it went.
Yeah, I've known him for 12 years, and similar every time I see him.
I think he's going to do the podcast tomorrow.
I have to initiate the hug.
I think he's doing the podcast tomorrow. Should I ask him?
His new TV series, Tall Poppies, is airing on Netflix. He just sold it to Netflix, a sitcom that he made in New Zealand. I think that's what he's probably promoting.
Excellent.
But he's very excited about that. And just asking about Legit, get another point.
What we really want to talk about is Legit. Your appearance, your turn on Legit.
I have a storyline for him next season, which I can't say what it is, obviously, but it's going to be fucking awesome. It's the best thing ever. I told him about him at the Magic Castle. He goes, I don't think I'll be comfortable doing that. But yeah, I knew Reese. The funny thing about Reese is everyone sort of thinks he's a character. He's like a Michael Winslow type comic.
Oh yeah, he does a lot of
helicopters and gunshots and stuff like that. And if you're with him, he does it in real life. Like, he has a little case that he holds his cards in, and whenever he opens it, he goes like that. Like, it's constant.
So he's he could not have found the more perfect job. I mean, like, with the Concords show.
From what I've been told, and Reese might correct me, but they didn't want him. They wanted an American manager for that role. And Reese hadn't done any acting or anything at that stage. And now he's since in movies and all that type of stuff. But that was his first acting job.
Yeah.
And they fought for him. And he was on a very basic wage in the first season. And it picked up a lot because the show was a success.
Oh, you mean the Brett and Jermaine wanted him?
Yeah,
No, we wanted him.
No, they're like, we got this guy from New Zealand. And because they had to fly him out, house him, get him visas, all that type of stuff. They really fought to have Reese, and Reese played their manager on the radio show. There was a radio show.
I know the
before.
BBC show, yeah.
Yeah.
Which was amazing. And also, what a great way to test run a show is just like this radio. I mean, we have it with podcasts now, but the sort of like the radio play, radio comedy culture is so great. I mean, you can test things out, and then, oh, the story works because we didn't have to use any visuals, so now let's take it to television.
Let's get some money and let's do it.
Did you ever do any of the radio plays?
No, I've always disliked my speaking voice, you know. I don't know if I... But now I'm getting more into it as I'm getting older.
But you're a comic and you do podcasts.
Yeah, I just have a nasally... and I mumble. So I don't think... You know, I think I'm good on radio. I've done a fine job here today.
We barely even talked about pinball machines. I mean, you mentioned your pinball lair.
I got the Wizard of Oz one. The last time I was here, I was saying how it was a good machine, but I thought it was a bit girly to have a Wizard of Oz machine, and then I bought it like a week later.
And do you like it?
I do like it, yeah. It's the most expensive one I bought, actually. And I've got a World Cup one that I'm thinking of trading out whilst the World Cup's on because I might get more money for it. I was like, no. The real problem is that it has problems that I can't fix.
There's a bar that opened up in LA called 82.
Yeah.
And it's basically an arcade downtown.
Cool.
And one of the giant rooms is all old arcade cabinets.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, all the good ones, but then a lot of like deep ones that you'd like, you know, I think they might have like a Gorf machine. I mean, like, they have some like really deep cuts. In addition to the hits. And then there's a whole pinball room too.
Yeah. I'm thinking of buying Pub Champion, which isn't a very well-rated game, but it's one that I always enjoy playing whenever.
Do you like the really, really old pinball games that were sort of like the, you know,
them from about 1990 on, the ones that I played when I was a kid, Adam's Family and all that type of stuff. They're the ones that I like.
Yeah.
And I have a theory now at the moment on, you only like things when you're young. That's why I want to buy a Predator head. I don't want to buy an Avatar head.
No, of course not.
I want to buy shit from when I was young, and that's why I haven't really gotten into a new band since Oasis. And it's been like a really long time.
You're buying Noel Gallagher
because
head.
I listen to songs, and I like that they remind me of a time in my life when I was younger. And it's like now I don't want to like a song because I don't want to be remembered. But I don't want to remember this time at all. I think that's what happens. It's not like when you're 90, you go, I'm really into this new band because it doesn't hold any good memories. It's just shit.
No, there's a window. There's a window, and it's probably 10 to 25. And that's where all of your stuff gets scooped in.
Yeah, well,
and everything
we were
after that.
Sex with girls with hairy vaginas who thought we had AIDS. It was a terrible era.
That was the 80s and the 90s.
I didn't get a laugh out of him on that one. I thought that deserved something.
I was trying to cut down the deepness.
Oh, what are you writing?
I cut down stuff for the site.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
does this get edited down, does it? Or?
A little bit, just a little bit, usually just a little bit for time. But I found that I have this theory, and I really still have to go through all the notes, that I don't write well if I just sit down and write jokes.
No, I don't. Not even with my TV show, I have a writer's assistant.
Yeah, and so that's essentially what Kyle's doing, and it's not anything that you say or that the guest says, but if I fire something off that I think I could develop later, he just reminds me of what that is because I'll forget. And I don't go back and listen to the show.
Yeah, I write a lot of stand-up. Like, there's things now like that. I thought, oh, maybe that could be a thing about the AIDS and the generation thing. I could do a bit of stand-up on that because I've never thought of doing a stand-up. It was like the first time.
Yeah, because the way you presented it was really nice, that it was sandwiched in between two eras where people didn't have to worry about stuff and now where people just don't seem to worry about things that they should worry about. But that we were they're like, oh no.
But it's that weird thing that when on radio and podcasts where you write a joke, like, so now I consider that a joke that I've written, right? Although I've never written it down because I don't write it. And then people are like, yo, I heard you do that's on a new bit. And you're like, it really is. You heard the
I find the number of people that do that is really small, because in the beginning of the podcast I was spinning stuff that I would riff into longer bits, and I was really worried, like, someone already heard this on the podcast. And it wasn't really, I think, as long as you...
I don't think your fans are as hateful as my fans, though. I love my fans, but I wouldn't want to hang out with them.
That's really funny. I
take that back. I would hang out with them, but it's... They're, I've got some fucking... Like crazy ass guys who follow me.
And have you been hanging out with someone after a show and then halfway through, have you had the experience where you've gone like, oh, this may be a mistake. This person might be...
Back in the days of business cards, I've had sex with a girl. I realized I gave her my business card 6 hours earlier. While she was having a shower, I went back into her purse to retrieve it.
Oh, no. Did you get it?
Yeah. Once I found out what a fan she was. I get a lot of guys that write to me and they say this, hey, when you come to my town, best weed in all of America, drinks are on me. And I'm like, what do you think's going to happen, dude?
People say that to me and they know I'm sober. They say that to me, like, I'll buy you a beer. I'm like, I can't do that. But I think the best thing that this podcast has done is that I really like our... I mean, obviously, this sounds pandery, so I'm even hesitant to say it because I feel like maybe no one's going to believe it. But I genuinely like the people that come out to the shows. If they listen to me talk for any
people at
the time...
I like the people.
I feel like a... They're people I would hang out with because they get all my references. Like, if they listen with regularity, it's like, oh, we all know the same things and we could all hang out.
I found that in the last couple of years, my audience has gotten older. It used to be a lot younger. And now it feels like I'm a comic for couples.
What?
Yeah, I get like lots of like people, 30-year-old married people come along. I don't know why.
I don't know.
I like that. It used to be just be men.
Yeah.
I used to make so many references how there was no women in the building.
Yeah.
And that's changed.
Now there's women in the building.
There's women in the
You've
building.
Matured.
All my fans have matured, and
or it's they were they were
they've married women and they
that's
just
right.
drag them along.
They used to be. They just used to be. That's what it is. They've just gotten older. And it's like,
yeah, I'm getting half the laughs.
It's so strange when the audience was half women. I found out.
Yeah. You might have been Seinfeld there. The audience was half women.
And what's with these little hangers on the socks? I think we're at about an hour. No, we blazed through. This was great. I love when you come on. It's fun to, because you're very comfortable with this format. So you just
talking.
Yeah, I mean, like the podcast format. Not everyone's super. Yeah. A lot of people will talk and then they're just done and they look at you.
I think about starting up another podcast, but I really, at the moment, I'd wait until my show's cancelled. So probably next week, we'll probably do that. It's just, it takes up a lot of time. I'm going to be doing it at midnight next week.
Is it next week or is it? It is next week, yeah.
And I'm doing it with Arden.
Arden Marin, yeah.
Arden is in Legit.
And who else, who's the other person?
And the other one's Kate Walsh. And Kate Walsh's boyfriend, who she lives with, is my writing partner.
Oh, that's fantastic. See, I think you're going to have the show is always really...
My writing partner for TV, not for stand-up. I do that by myself.
It's good for people to know that. Yeah. They go, does someone write your material? No. I write it myself.
Yeah.
It's good that you know the other two panels because the show's always fun, but it just kind of goes to another level when you know.
Yeah.
Because I find when people don't know each other on the show, they kind of stick in their own lane.
And it also becomes more of a competition.
More of a competition. They really try to win. And everyone really does, I think, try to win on some level. But when everyone knows each other, it just completely loosens up the dynamic of the show and everyone's having fun and fucking around and it's not so... You know, this person.
And so I was just saying outside that I only get, I don't know if it's my nature or whatever, but whenever I'm on a late night show, I only get, the other guest is always female.
Really?
I've done two Conans and two Kimmels, right?
Yep.
And these are all the people who have been the other people. So I had the Marianne Coulthard,
mm-hmm.
Oscar winners. That one was probably pretty good. Jessica Simpson.
Yep.
Marlon Ackerman, who's the...
Oh, yeah, I know. I know who Marlon Ackerman is. Yeah, I love her.
And Mindy Kaling,
Mindy Kaling, yeah.
Kaling last night. So they're the four other guests I've had, right? So obviously they go, oh, well, to soften Jim up, whatever.
So you're saying,
I guess I believe
it's intentional.
I believe it's intentional. Now, nothing against these ladies. I think they're all very funny and they were all great guests and all that type of stuff. But I just want to be on with like a Tom Hanks. But like, see, tomorrow, the next one on Kimmel was like, after me was... Bill Clinton.
Oh, so you just want to
I
be
want
on...
to be on Bill Clinton Day. I know it's not a sexist thing. I'd be on a Hillary Clinton Day as well. I just want to meet someone that I'm not going to bump into in a comedy club.
Someone that you were like, I better get a picture of this.
Yeah. And I haven't asked for a picture with any of the other ones. I very rarely ask. I got a picture with Carrie Fisher.
You have to.
Who else have I asked for pictures with? That's it. I've only ever asked for a picture with Carrie Fisher. I wanted a picture with Jessica Simpson because she was pregnant and I had my son there. And I thought if I could get my son in the picture as well, that would be a cool picture. But she didn't seem up for that. So I didn't.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was like she just didn't want, you know, Weight Watchers and pregnant. And she's just very conscious of what photos are taken of her, I guess. It wasn't anything like, not with you. It just, she didn't want to take photos.
It's so funny. I do feel like that some, I mean, like. If I know someone's taking a picture, I'm like, oh, man, I do have a bit of that of vanity where I'm like, I don't look good.
Oh, well, I'll show you my Carrie Fisher picture. That's my only one I'll show you. Because it's funny because she really, she'll curve into you. She really snuggles up old Carrie.
Oh.
It's a nice thing. It's a nice thing. Hold on. Where is it? I know this is bad, right? You can edit this down. Okay, well, there's Lazenby. I did take a picture with Lazenby.
Oh, look at that. Still dashing.
Oh, yeah, he walks around sort of with his wrinkled forehead. And
yeah, his forehead's wrinkled because his eyebrows are always up. Hello, yeah. Everyone.
And where's the Fisher?
Carrie Fisher.
Oh, wow, that's... I've got one with me and the director. That's not the one I wanted to show you. Anyway, okay.
No Carrie Fisher?
Well, I got a picture of her with the director.
Oh, look at that. Oh, she's looking sultry.
Yeah. She does a little downward pout in photos and a raise of the eyebrow. She, yeah.
Nice.
But that was the thing. My brother was losing his shit. My brother, like, because that's all we did as kids was watch Star Wars. And then when my brother was ringing me up all day, like, oh, how is it? What's it all? Like, thinking there'd be, like, some big Star Wars activity that me and her would be doing.
Now, see, what you should do is cast, like, C-3PO on the show, but he does not play himself either. He's like Jason. Like, he's just a regular... He's just another character.
I don't know. Next season, would you let me be on at midnight in an episode?
Yeah, yes.
All right, cool. I'll do that then.
Yeah.
I try to find little bits where I can be on other TV shows within the TV show.
Oh, done, yeah. Whatever you want. So Legit is on Wednesday nights at 10.
Wednesdays at 10 on FXX, the easiest channel to find on the whole. It might be up in the sports section. It could be. It might be listed as something else. Look for FXX.
Or just type in Legit.
Yeah, Legit. You can find it that guide. Way. Yeah, don't put in Lazenby. I don't think that'll come up.
It may come up. It'll be legit, and then
my father, man, when I because was Magda's like a fat actress, and then my mother went, "So I'm being played by a fat actress, am I?" And I said, "Yes, Mum." She goes, "Who's your father being played by?" And I went, "James Bond." And so my dad, he didn't even know who George Lazenby was. He knew Roger Moore or whatever in it. And so my dad was like, James, he went down to his lawn bowls club. He plays lawn bowls every day.
Oh.
And he went down, "I'm James Bond. I'm James Bond."
He's taken that on.
"Yeah, I'm James Bond in the movie. I mean, the TV. My son has a TV. What are you talking about? My son has a TV show. I've never seen it. It's not on over here."
It's a real thing.
"My son has a TV show in America, and I'm being played by James Bond."
"Which one? I don't know."
And then literally it was like this, because I know this is how the conversation went, because it was the phone call he made to me afterwards. It would have gone like this. "Roger Moore?" No, Roger Moore. "Sean Connery?" "No, why would Sean Connery be in my son's TV show?" And then it was a bit of like, "Timothy?" "Nah, not him. The Australian bloke, George Londonberry." And then my dad comes and he calls me back. He goes, "I need you to spell that guy's fucking name." Because you know he had to go down there with a bit of paper.
"Here it is." Well, it's good to see you, man. I'll see you on the show next week.
All right.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone. Thanks.
The end.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
I'm Shimol Yai, and I have a new podcast called The Competition. Every year, 50 high school senior girls compete in a massive scholarship competition.
I wouldn't say I have an ego problem, but I'm extremely competitive.
All of the competitors are used to being the best and the brightest. And they're all vying for a huge cash prize.
This will probably be the most intense thing you've ever gone through in your life.
I remember that feeling because I was one of them. I lost. But now I'm coming back as a judge and also a kind of teen girl anthropologist. Because if you want to understand what it's like to be a young woman in America today, The Competition's not a bad place to start.
Hopefully no one will die on stage tonight.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.